This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, if you want to know the story behind the book, I have a great author on today. Some people are born to write, but not all are born to write thrillers. But for my guest today, Lise Wheel, she was destined for both. Hi, Lise.
Hi, Patsy with a Z from Florida. It's great to meet you.
Oh, it's so fantastic to talk to you. The only problem I had today was my husband wanted to come into the studio to talk to you because he gets so thrilled every time you come on the air.
Well, you should have let him in.
I should have. Oh, he just loves you. Well, as I said, it was destiny. After all, your mother taught English, and your father is a real G-man, a real special agent for the FBI. Wow.
Yes. Wow. Yes. It's true. the only rule we had growing up was my brother and I was we had to come home. We had to have dinner every night, but you know whatever the food was. My mom's a great cook, of course, but whatever the food was, we had to come home for dinner and tell about our days. Right. And so, you know, Dad would talk about putting the bad guys away, but of course I didn't really know what it was. And Mom would talk about her day and students and papers and teaching stuff. So, and correcting my grammar.
Well, she did a good job.
She did a good job, I guess. And so, I guess I was sort of grown up to either teach or write or
exactly. To do all of it, because actually you do everything. I mean, you are so accomplished. And the new book, The Candidate, which came out just in time and just at the right time.
Oh, I know.
Crazy, you know, it's a second in this the Newsmaker series about a beautiful, gorgeous television personality.
It's flawed.
Okay, we know it's based on you. You know what my husband said. A beautiful, glamorous television. Well, we know it's Lise.
Well,
of course, your character is called Erica Sparks, and she does get herself into little problems.
Oh my gosh! Could Erica just stay home for a day? Stay under the covers? The poor little thing.
I know. Well, you know, The Candidate is it's a perfect title for a really perfect political thriller, and in a way, I sort of was thinking about having you on today. I was thinking, am I taking her away from real business? You know, the historical business that you're involved in, I'm sure right now up to your ears in. But, you know, it's always fun to promote your book. So
I get to steal
a few minutes of your.
It is. And well, I love it. And I close my office door and you can hear the bing, bing, bing in the background. I'm like, okay, just stop the phone. Stop. Leave me alone.
Well, because
it's a little crazy.
There's a new little news thing coming out every minute, it seems. So,
it's like you can't. You know, when I was writing Newsmakers, but it wasn't too hard to figure out that we would have. You know, and excuse me, I got my tea in the background and my little, like, I stopped at a little deli and I got some eggs and some potato fries and some whole wheat toast. So I'm eating as I'm talking to you and I close the office door. So you hear me chomping and chewing and teeing in the background. Not peeing, teeing.
I hope.
Yeah, no, the view, but I'm gulping on some tea. But so I wrote it. Wasn't too hard to figure out that there would be, you know, the first female candidate. So you got that. But then you got the first Hispanic male, but married to the billionaire's wife, right?
Or I would like to call her the most deliciously diabolical.
Yes, we love to hate Celeste, right?
Oh, she's fantastic.
She's lovely to hate. But billionaire's wife, and how did she become a billionaire? Ties to China.
Right? You have so much in this book.
It's amazing, right? So she makes her money with these deals to China, and she's got this partner in crime, if you will, who's just even more diabolical, even more evil. And everything is coming, you know, forward with these real candidates in Hillary and Trump, it's just, oh my gosh.
It's like all mixed up in your mind.
Yes. Did I do this to the country? No, I didn't. I couldn't have done it. Please, I didn't do it.
Well, you know, the book is just such a fun read. You know, they talk about cozy mysteries, but like this is like a cozy thriller, the kind of thriller that you just want to take. You want a nice cup of tea and cookies, and you just want to sit there and read this book in a way to get away from reality.
The real stuff, right?
Because yours is fun, and we hope that there's going to be a resolution that is going to be one that we want in the book. We're not all so sure in reality, so it's just a fun read.
And yes, it's a fun, and it is fiction, and it is an escape from what's really going on, because in real life, we don't know what's going to happen. And this, it does wrap up, and you know, there is an ending. everything is going to, well, I can't,
no.
Obviously, the world doesn't blow up. No, there is a sequel to this, so the world does not blow up.
We hope not.
We hope. No, so, and Erica is, but you know, she's such a, I just really love her. She's so intrepid. And the thing with Erica that I love is that you don't find in some reporters is that she really, you know, she is flawed. She's not you would not give her Mother of the Year award in some ways. But she really is out there for the truth. It's not about ratings. It's not about, that's why I have to lock my door. It's not about just getting the best ratings and trying to, you know, just get the best ratings for Global News Network. It's not about that. She really wants, she doesn't want the fame. Fame for her is really kind of annoying. And it really is. If you really get into her part, her persona, she wears a baseball cap. She doesn't, I mean, she really, it's part of what she has to kind of endure at a certain point.
And I love that she plays solitaire. It reminds me of my sister. My sister, when she wants to think about something, she plays solitaire. It's so funny.
Exactly. Well, you know what? Okay, let me see. I'm not sure this is going to work on radio, but I'm going to pull out my deck of cards. Can you hear? Okay, let me see. Can you hear this?
Yeah.
can you hear this on radio?
Yeah, we hear it. That's it.
That's my deck of cards. See, I like the tactile feeling of cards. I've said before, it's stress. It's not even so much about stress. When I need to concentrate on an issue, like really focus, what I'll do is right here, put out this deck of cards and just play it. And I'll just look at the deck. And I'll play a few rounds. I've got to put them back right now. Play a few rounds right here, and I'll go, whatever that focus is, whatever that brain thing is, I have no idea. A psychiatrist probably diagnosed it, but no idea. It's just like you focus, right? You focus, and your brain is focused on those cards, and I come out of that go, oh, that's it. Whatever it is, I have no idea. It really focuses my brain. And that's what Erica does. She just looks at the card. She plays around. If she's in a hotel, she's on the plane, if she's in her office, and she's going through the most dire of, like, what do I do in this situation? And she'll play a deck or two. She'll play around by herself, not on the computer, but just by herself, and it really helps focus and hone her brain. I have no idea why that happened. I remember my Danish grandmother did. My Danish grandfather did, and it just, I don't know, it's just something
weird,
you know, in your brain.
I have to ask you, since you bring up being Danish, you know, in this politically correct world, do Danish people get upset when people quote Shakespeare that something is rotten in Denmark?
Rotten in Denmark? I don't think so. I think... You know, it's so funny, the Danes, you know, we're just a thumb. We're just a little thumb on the world. We are the Danes, you know, or we always laugh too about there. You know, when people talk, they go into a place, give me a Danish. You know what? There is no Danish. That's a made up thing. There is no Danish, quote unquote, Danish pastry. We laugh about that. There is no Danish pastry. No, seriously, there is no Danish pastry. There, we have many, many types of pastry in Denmark, but there is no quote-unquote Danish pastry.
Well,
So, I even say there's something rotten in Denmark. Like when I talk about Erica Sparks, she starts to investigate these two candidates. And, you know, she realizes there's something rotten in Denmark, and it's much more than their pantsuit or their hair. So I even use that. No. We laugh about that. We pseudo Danes. I mean, I'm half Danish, full blood half Danish. But no, we look little Danes. I mean, we're happy to get something, you know.
Well, when I read your book, of course, I mean, being in this political time, just the first page is so telling, where you have this, as I said, Celeste is just so deliciously diabolical. Whoa. and she's thinking about the media,
right? And, oh yeah,
yeah, and they have to be cultivated, she says.
Mm-hmm. Well, she wants to get Erica on her side,
wooed, manipulated.
Wants to use Erica. Yeah,
sounds so familiar today.
Yeah, absolutely. See, they want to get Erica. Erica is very powerful to them. Erica is an up and coming star at GNN, which is an up and coming network. Based in Midtown, New York. Ooh, gee, where am I located?
Oh, my.
Where am I? Midtown, New York. But they want to use Erica, again, very, very powerful, and to manipulate her, to tell, you know, help them tell their story. And, you know, I totally get it. That's what they, you know, they want to be able to use her. And it's only when she gets, you know, closer that she could potentially be in trouble. But at first they want to cultivate her. They want to bring her into the fold. She could be manipulated. Absolutely. Because if a media person can be manipulated by a candidate, they want to do that.
Oh, they do.
Absolutely.
I think we've been reading about that lately.
Right. Right. And that's absolutely true. 110% true. And it works both ways, because then the media person can be, you know, get access to the candidate, whether it's presidential or senator or whatever level. Then they get that access, and that works well for them, because then they can have that person on the program. They get that exclusive. They can get more ratings. You know, so it works. It really works both ways.
Well, one of the fun thing about the Newsmaker series and about Erica is the behind the scenes.
Yeah. Don't you love that?
I love it. And I'm sure everybody's trying to guess who's that. And not that anybody is really, none of the women are bitchy or anything like that. But there are some politics being played back.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's the fun of it, too, is I was, you know, thinking about what you know, because I wrote about In Triple Threat, which was a New York Times bestseller series. I wrote about my experience being a prosecutor, and that was great. I was a prosecutor for 5 years. I loved it. But I've been in the TV business now for 15 years. So I thought, well, wait a second. Why shouldn't I should probably switch from my prosecutorial viewpoint to my television viewpoint.
And give us some juicy tidbits, too,
exactly.
Along the way.
Exactly. Give you the behind the scenes of what it's really like to be in the television industry, and give you, you know, hair and makeup and the beautiful people that, you know, the wardrobe people and all that. And so I do. I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And you really get to know the television industry by looking at the behind the scenes of the men and women behind the scenes, the producers, the line assistants, the hair and makeup people, the wardrobe people. And you get that behind the scenes in the candidate and with the newsmakers and who Erica deals with, because, you know, those people can make or break you. I mean, because they're the ones who see everything. And they're the ones who see not only Erica, but they're the ones who see the politicians who come through and who talk on their cell phones. And honestly, who often mistreat those people, because they mistreat them. How? They mistreat them by thinking they're not even people. Like, I can talk on my cell phone and, they're not even people. They're not even listening. You know, I can just say whatever I want to say because they're not even like human beings, which is horrible to say. It's a horrible, horrible commentary on some of these people. But I'll also tell you, some of the nicest people are the biggest people. Biggest meaning, but the biggest celebrity are sometimes the nicest people, the hair and makeup. they'll come in and say, hi, how are you? How are your kids? What's going on? It's oftentimes like the mid-level to the D-level celebrity that the diva-ist. You know, it's really strange phenomenon. It's really interesting for me to look at after I've been here this long.
Well, I bet some of these people, the makeup and hair, they recognize
so
themselves and like
stuff.
That?
What?
Do they recognize themselves?
Oh, yeah. Of course, I don't name anybody.
No, I know, but
name, of course.
But I bet some of them really...
Oh, yeah, they laugh. They're like, oh, my God. That's me.
I did that.
Yeah. Because, but, no, it's fun. Because, no, I mean, the people that I work with are so lovely. And, after all these years, we're so many great friends here. I just love them. And we take care of each other, and we laugh. But we look at people that come in and just go, oh, my goodness, are you kidding me? You did this. You said that. Are you kidding me?
Well, are your
Erica sees everything.
Are your wardrobe people now taking into consideration that whatever you wear now, in during this political season, people are going to be looking at this 100 years from now, 200 years from now, because these things are going to be repeated over and over
Well, it's funny too because you don't. It's really funny because it's like if I wear red or blue. You know, it's just like,
Okay, yeah.
Right?
She's on that side.
right. Which is just funny because, like, well, some days I just want to wear red or blue. Just because it's like, that's a nice, pretty dress to wear or something. But it gets really a little bit silly, I think. But you got to be careful.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if you're wearing the wrong color with the wrong person. And, my goodness.
I know. No, I'm not telegraphing anything. I'm really not.
Well, but people see conspiracy in everything. And Erica, of course, runs into quite a few conspiracies here.
She does. She's got to be so careful. And she, you know, plus she's got the thing going on with her daughter, and she's trying to balance all that. And,
I wanted to mention that relationship with the daughter, because, as you said, she's not mother of the year.
She's not mother of the year. No, she makes mistakes that I would hope that I don't make. She doesn't put her daughter first in some instances, which that's why I say I distance myself from her. You know, you said I am Erica. No, I'm really not.
In the beautiful part.
Hey, well, thank you. I really appreciate that. But, you know, I'm not her in that. I think she makes some really wrong decisions. And I would not do some of the things she did. And, you know, she loses Erica in some ways, and loses Erica at a very but she, you know, the only thing is she does it in a way, again, not for the story, but because the country really is dependent on her. I mean, it's the nation. It really is the nation. It's not just you know, a story or right here and now. It really is the country that is at stake, the future of the United States of America that is at stake.
Exactly, because she uncovers something that no one else has seen.
It's so big.
And the way that she does, I mean, the impetus sort of what starts the story is also, I mean, it is a dramatic beginning.
Right.
And just so well done. I just when I read it, I said, "Wow! This is going to be a great story."
Thank you. I mean, it's so big that I mean to say I wouldn't have done what she did is a little bit unfair in the sense that to save Jenny or save her relationship with Jenny at the time, at the temporal time, I say, "Well, I would have done that because I want to keep my daughter. You know, keep my."
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side. On the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my next guest, Amy Alipio. Hi, Amy, are you there?
Hi there, Patsy. Yes,
hi,
I'm here.
Amy.
How are you?
Okay, I'm so happy to welcome you to the Joy on Paper to talk about wild, beautiful places.
Happy to be here.
Picture-perfect journeys around the globe from National Geographic. Of course, you are an editor at National Geographic Traveler, and wow, this book is amazing. I love it. I'm just, for the people who are looking on the internet, I'm holding up the cover, and it's a beautiful cover, and it has my favorite animal on the cover, which I just fell in love with. I love giraffes, and I have a 7-foot giraffe at my front door. So what a perfect book for me.
Yes, this is. I'm so glad you like it. People have been really excited about it. We're really excited about it. That's a great book that took a lot of effort and teamwork to put together.
Well, it is beautiful. And, you know, I don't even know where to start. How many of these places have you been to? A lot of them?
Oh, no. Some of these are, you know, people always ask. Actually, that's the first thing people always ask when I tell people I work at National Geographic Traveler. Like, have you been everywhere? And the short answer is, like, not as many places you would think, because we do have to put out the magazine.
Okay.
That requires being actually in the office.
Oh, my goodness. They make you work. They make you work.
Can't work for the wedding, exactly.
Well, of course.
But, what we've done is...
National Geographic always gets the greatest photographers and the writers too. The writing that goes along with each of the stories is really great.
Yeah, I'm glad you love it, because it was hard to put together. It's got 50 places, but we drew from our archives, actually, because not only do we have like contemporary photos of these places, but vintage photos pulled from our archives. And it reflects really like 125-plus years of National Geographic exploring the world. And it's got that diversity to it, the history to it. It's got familiar places like St. Moritz in Switzerland, which is that famous ski town, but it's got places you might not have heard about, like the Jujuy province in Argentina, where they have these salt flats that are otherworldly and stark, but they're beautiful in their own way. I think this is a great package for anyone who is graduating or having, you know, a retirement party, because it's got lots of ideas for the bucket list.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you read this, you want to go to all of the places. And as you said, you've pulled out photos from 100 years ago or more. And it's so nice to see these photos in combination with the big color photos. But to see these old black and white photos, I found it really enhanced the book and made it so interesting.
Oh, great. I'm glad to. Yeah, I mean, that was really one of the goals was to include vintage photos so people get a sense of the place's history as well as a tourism destination. You know, it's something I think that we don't often think about, that some people, you know, we're not often the first visitors to a destination, that some people have been there before us and that people will come after us. So we should leave it in a way, keep that in mind so that we leave a place in a way that we visited.
Well, I also like for each of the locations, you have a little box that's called Travel Wise, and it says how to visit and planning and how to stay or where to stay. And I think that's so helpful for people who are, you know, they're reading the book and they say, oh, well, I wonder if I could go. And then you have the information there on, how to visit it, what's the best way to get around and how to make plans.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, that was one of the criteria we used to include it. We didn't want places that people couldn't get to. We really wanted it to be a book where people could travel to. And some of them, you do need to be maybe an adventurous traveler to get there. But we wanted to include how to do it and, how to visit, when is the best time of the year to go, what's a good tour guide to take over there, where to stay. So people don't think these aren't places that they will never be able to visit.
Well, you've accomplished that beautifully because, as I said, I'm reading the book, I'm looking at the photos, but every time I got to one of these little Travel Wise, I had to stop and read it and make sure, could I get there? And if I really have the time and a little bit of money, could I get there? And those are so helpful.
Right. I mean, so were there places that you like are definitely on your list for the future?
Oh, I don't. There's so many, but I would love to go. I've always wanted to go to Iceland. I love the Iceland one. It's just fantastic. And Denmark. I like the Faroe Island photos. It's that looks like an amazing place to go. I was just talking to somebody who's Danish, and so really sort of intrigued me what it would be like to go there. And of course, right. South America. Some these places, many of them, I had not really known about, and so it was just eye opening to see these photos. But then some are more doable, like Molokai in Hawaii. I know my brother and his wife are going to Hawaii, and I'm going to share this book with them because they really, I think, will be intrigued to make sure they put that on their itinerary.
That definitely, because I feel like Molokai is where real old Hawaii still lives. You know, they still speak Hawaiian there. Like, you'll go to the grocery store and you can still hear Hawaiian spoken.
Wow. And that looks like, I love what they write about it, that some say Molokai is what the Hawaiian island looked like 50 years ago. Others would argue this is what the world should strive to resemble in the future. Wow.
Right.
That's very powerful.
I mean, the fact that they don't even have a single traffic light there really says a lot.
Whoa, it is paradise. Exactly. And the photographs of Molokai are just gorgeous. Just gorgeous. It's hard, when you're on the radio and you're looking at these photos and it's just one after another. They're so fantastic.
I know. You wish you could share it in some way. I wish my powers of description were better so I could, tell your listeners what you're looking at in the book.
Exactly. Well, as you said, it is a perfect gift book. The holidays are coming up. It's a wonderful book to have to give at Christmas and Hanukkah. And just because... to take a few minutes every day and just to look at this book, I think, is calming to the, with all the stress and everything that's going on in the world, just to sit down with this book. We talk about, coffee table books, but this is the kind of book that I want to keep, on right there near me, not far from me, so that I can just pick it up and for a few minutes, just relax, just go into another world, and to see the beauty, just the beauty of it all.
Yeah, it's so interesting you say that, because someone else has mentioned to me that they feel like they could use it for their daily meditation. You know, like they take this book instead of doing like a book of quotes, or they, you know, just dip into this book, and it's like your daily meditation and the escape from, you know, the crazy news cycle. And I feel that that we have accomplished something.
I think you're right. It's absolutely, if you're the kind who does this meditation or yoga, you know, just take one of these, just open to one of these gorgeous photos and stare at it for a while, then close your eyes, and I think you'll find your blood pressure goes down. You're just like, whoa, it's just so beautiful.
They should be prescribing this. Doctors should be prescribing this, and, you know.
Well, I think it would do a lot of good, and I found one of the most delightful things is all the photos of the animals, sometimes animals that I had never seen before, or animals, you know, shot in a new way that I don't mean shot with a gun, shot a photo shoot, to make them really just so intriguing, and you just want to stare at them, and you want to know them better, and you wish you could, you know, spend some time just watching them.
Right, and there's some animal pictures in this book that are just full of drama. Like, there's one of a bison bull, and it's one of our vintage photos and taken in Montana's Bison National Park. And the photographer looks like they're right under a charging bull, basically. The bull is like, there's dust, and the bull is like getting ready to charge, and they're like this close. Feels like you're like inches from the bull's charging nose.
Well, I did. I looked at it. I thought, how did that photographer get such a photo?
I know.
It is amazing. And of course, next to it is an albino buffalo, which was, I hadn't known the story that there was a blind albino buffalo that went to the Smithsonian Zoo. So that was a cute little story.
Right.
But that's exactly what you've done in this book. You've brought out nice little stories, and I think it's just beautifully done.
Thank you. Yes, I mean I think the basis of everything we do at National Geographic is based on great storytelling, and of course the great image. But no matter if it's in print or in a book or online or on the channel, it really comes down to that great story. Those stunning images.
So what's your favorite one here? Can you have a favorite?
Wow, that's so hard. I mean, some have personal connections. For example, you know, I have been to the Nile Valley in Egypt when I was like a teenager, so it made a big impression on me. Although one of my travel stories I always share, like travel knows, is has to do with our first night in Cairo. We were eating at an outdoor cafe and enjoying the sunset and the exotic smell of the air. And what I didn't realize was that while we were doing this, I was also becoming a buffet for like half of Cairo's mosquito population. And I didn't really realize it till I got to the hotel later, looked down at my legs, and they were like red polka dotted legs. Colored legs, basically, and I stopped counting the number of mosquito bites at around 50. So not all the memories are great, only in retrospect. But what else?
It is really amazing, though, when you stand at those columns and how small humans are compared to these columns.
I think that's
mind-boggling how they did it. You see it and you say, okay, but how did they really put, you know, the people were amazing.
Right. I mean, you just can't even imagine how they do this. It's similar to if you visit like Machu Picchu and Peru. That's not in the book, but you get that sense of, you know, how did they do this? Why did they do this? Why did they build this city up here in the clouds on a, you know, on a little plateau with sheer cliff drops all around? It boggles the mind.
Well, my husband was in Machu Picchu and, so I've seen a lot of photos of it, and there's a story about how, you know, they built the road there in three years. I mean, it's amazing. Up there in the middle of nowhere, they build roads. And we have a road here in Tampa. They've been working on that road for 10 years and they still haven't finished it. So every time we drive by there, we say Machu Picchu. They could do Machu Picchu. So, you know, it's, that's funny. I always think of that when I think of travel. Yeah. And eventually I have to get to Machu Picchu myself. So,
yeah, the Incas were great road makers.
Yeah, exactly. I think we should send, you know, if I get rich, I'm going to send all of these road workers down there and say, they built it in 3 years. You've got 10 years and you're still not done and you have machinery. My goodness. But, well, I mean, that's one of the fun things that you do discover when you travel, all of the amazing accomplishments of people long time ago in some of these places.
I know, we think we're so high-tech and progressive sometimes, and then when you look at something like Machu Picchu or the pyramids, or in the book we have Chiapas, the temples that they made there in Guatemala, you just realize that, you know, we're not the best things ever to, you know, first appear on the scene, and we should, you know, there's ways to learn from the past.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the most beautiful photos is this the one of the Indian girl in, I'm trying to find it, Marco Vernacci did in Argentina. I don't know if you remember that photo. In it's the Indian girl with the feathers. It is one of the best photos I've ever seen in my life. It's just amazing.
Wow. Oh, yeah, that one. Oh, my God, yeah, that is beautiful.
With the feathers blowing in the wind. Mm-hmm. You think, my goodness, this photographer must have, like, when he took the photo, he must have afterward just sat there and said, did I do that? I mean, did I make such amazing photo? It's
right.
Incredible. It's incredible.
Right. And what I love about it is that the color, like the way the feathers are, really connects her with the landscape behind her, which is also like similar colored. It's like kind of beige gray and like red dirt behind her. So she just feels really like a part of the landscape.
It is an amazing photo. Absolutely amazing. And now does National Geographic sell some of these as posters?
They do. I don't know like which ones from the book, but we do have a section that does sell prints of National Geographic photos.
Well, that one people should buy.
You buy that one.
Oh, wow.
That one,
yeah. I'd put that on the wall in a minute.
Right.
It's just amazing. And, well, all of them, of course, are fantastic. And National Geographic has a great website.
Yeah. Travel.nationalgeographic.com is where you can find us.
Uh-huh. And of course, there's lots of information, not just about this book, about all of the fantastic National Geographic books. And, you know, it's just, as I said, when you come across a book that is something that just will be lasting, it's the kind of book that people will enjoy year after year after year. And it's partly, as I said, because of the photos, but also partly because of the write-ups that you've done, which are, I think, very compelling.
Right. And I think it's also just the types of places. These places are kind of timeless places. And so it can be 100 years from now. If we handle everything correctly, they would still look exactly the same.
Well, we hope so. We hope that these places will look the same. We hope that people will...
That's the wish. Yeah.
Well, one of the things is, as you wrote about Molokai, I mean, there's no reason things can't be beautiful. And, you know, you can still... You can have... you can build, but you could build with some beauty in it and try to make the world a beautiful place like this, you know. So I think if it inspires anybody who's... you know, in construction or in business and they're going to order a building, say, okay, let's make a beautiful building, you know, not just an ugly building, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah. And you know, let's see what people have done in the past and see what we can build on. We don't have to start from scratch.
And I do hope also it encourages people to understand that we have to protect, unfortunately, with what's going on in the world and the destruction in the Middle East, of some of the great places and great things that you have to worry about people not having the sense to understand that just because a culture wasn't something that you are familiar with or that you wanted particularly to be, there's no reason to destroy it. No reason, you know, to take away, you know, something that is historical.
Right. I mean, it is heartbreaking what is going on in Syria. And we always like to think that, you know, travel, if you get out there, travel, meet people. It's hard to be indifferent to them or to have misconceptions about other people when you've met them and you've eaten with them or have drinks with them. And that's why we always hope that travel serves that purpose.
Well, I think it does. And I just want people to, when they're reading this book, one of the locations, and I thought of it, is that's covered is Georgia, not the America Georgia, the Georgia in Europe, and the cave monasteries of Dabit.
Yeah.
I don't know how you pronounce it. Garaji?
Garaja, I guess.
I'm not sure how to pronounce it in Georgian. Dabit Garaja. But it's amazing when you see these caves that were built high on a cliff in Georgia, and you think about it, it housed 5,000 monks.
Yeah.
And the drawings and the paintings on the wall are just fantastic. And you hope that, you know, people will say, wow, if the people could do this in those days and they could do this kind of beautiful thing, I hope that people will want to be part of preserving these things, donating to the organizations that are preserving different historical locations like this, because this is something that should be saved and should be protected.
Right. I mean, this destination, the cave monasteries in Georgia, were definitely one of the places that not a lot of people have heard about. And our hope is, of course, that, as you said, is not just to be inspired because you're viewing these amazing pictures, but to take that next step, that actionable thing, and doing something about it, like, you know, donating some money to go to the preservation, spreading the word about them, that they need help.
And, you know, you have to be careful. You know, there are organizations that you check it out. If they're really doing the work of saving these locations, it's really worth investigating, because when you read this book and you see these beautiful locations, I know the minute I saw the cover and I saw this gorgeous giraffe running across the plains there in Africa, I thought, wow, I hope there'll be giraffes for thousands of years running free, and it's part of what we have to do to try to protect them.
Exactly, and that's the key thing, is that the running free thing, because we can have them in zoos, and sometimes they feel like commonplace, oh, it's just a giraffe, but like a wild giraffe is amazing to see.
Well, I always see in a giraffe, I think why I'm always drawn to them is that when they do, they look so funny, but when they run, it looks like they're full of joy. You know, they go, whoo!
Mm-hmm. I love that.
I mean, I'm my neck is too long, my legs are too long, but I can do it. I can run free.
But I'm going to run anyways.
Exactly. Everything is against me, but I can do it, you know, and I just feel that they have to have a special spirit to be able to do that. Otherwise, you know, they're like so high, they say, oh, I'm going to fall down. But no, their brain is set there. They can do it. So it's
just that way a little bit about like the penguins.
Yeah,
there's some pictures of the penguins that we'll see. I mean, they just look so awkward, the waddling, and then they slip into the water, and they're just like ballerinas.
Exactly. Well, this is a fantastic book, and as I said, it's called Wild Beautiful Places, and the Picture Perfect Journeys Around the Globe. And I want to thank you so much, Amy, for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, for talking to me today. It's been just a wonderful experience to get this book, and I want to thank National Geographic and thank you for talking to us about it.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Well, I, as I said, this is just a lovely book, and seeing the giraffe reminds me of a friend of mine. As I said, I have a 7-foot giraffe in my right at my front door, and my friend Trish Arredondo has a. I think she beat me. I think her giraffe must be 12 feet. I mean, it's a big giraffe. So we both have this love for giraffes, and Trish Arredondo and her husband wrote a lovely book called Maria's Journey, and I want to encourage everyone to have a look at it. It's just a great little book, a memoir about Ray's mother and about the struggles that she went through in coming as an immigrant to America, and it's an inspiring book, and it's available in Barnes & Noble, or you can go straight to mariasjourney.com and read the story about Maria. And it's a wonderful, wonderful and inspirational story. And I hope that in January, I want to do a little workshop on how to write your memoir and to preserve your family's history. And this is a good, good way to start. Read Maria's Journey by Trish and Ray Arredondo, and it's available at mariasjourney.com. And that's about it for today. Meanwhile, I just want to remind you that I do have coming up quite a few interesting authors, and one of them is on Thursday. It's Laura Schroff, and she wrote a book called Angels on Earth. It's by the author. She's the author of An Invisible Thread, which came out several years ago, which tells the movie story of how her life changed simply by one day stopping to help somebody. And her entire life changed from that moment. Not only did it lead to a best-selling book, but to many years now of going around and making inspirational speeches and helping people. And Angels on Earth is the book that resulted from the meetings that she has had with so many people who have been touched by people who cared. So I just want to tell you to come back on Thursday, and meanwhile, find your joy and share it, and just be happy. And I see you on Thursday. Bye for now. Thank you.